I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by iOCO, the IT services business in the EOH stable. I'm joined now by Varsha Remasa, who is the managing executive for data and analytics at iOCO. And I'm rejoined by Richard Vester, executive head of cloud at iOCO, for a further discussion on hyperscale computing. Varsha, Richard, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Duncan.
Thanks, Duncan.
Pleasure. Specifically, today we're going to be looking at three key areas in the hyperscale computing and cloud discussion, namely analytics and big data, skills, and moving data to actionable intelligence. Varsha, let's start the conversation with you. Tell me a bit about your role as managing executive for data and analytics at iOCO, what it entails, and the sort of conversations you're having with enterprises in South Africa.
Sure. Thanks, Duncan. In terms of what iOCO data and analytics entails, it's about bringing together data value proposition across the different aspects of data. And that starts from very foundational things like data architecture to data governance, good data management practices, and then shifts into more the visualization, data engineering, data analytics, and I think hot topics right now, machine learning and artificial intelligence.
So what sort of conversations are you having with your clients, big enterprises in South Africa? What are the pressing issues that they're bringing to your attention, and what messages are you sending to them?
It's actually been quite an interesting journey in terms of conversations. We're finding clients who are in the traditional space looking to see how do they accelerate this journey. There seems to be a sense of fear around, am I missing out on something? So there's definitely a FOMO aspect. Mm-hmm. And then we have clients who have actually evolved and are already on their cloud journey, quite advanced, but now they're hitting certain stumbling blocks around data. And a lot of it talks to the approach, getting a design right, so getting the thinking upfront correct, and by taking a different approach. I think what's emerging in the conversations is that a lot of clients have taken this is my current world, and I'm going to copy and paste this onto a cloud world. And I think it's that view which is causing a few challenges in the system. And I find a lot of the conversations are on how do we unbundle that, solve for that problem, or how do we approach it differently to avoid that.
Right. Richard, are you finding the same sort of copy and paste approach? How should companies be thinking differently about their IT when they start to have cloud conversations?
Yeah, I do fully agree. I think it's around understanding the architectural design, most definitely looking at the skill that sits inside the business. And I think talking to what Varsha was saying, the iOCO approach is making sure that we bring all that certification and skill and knowledge around the data world, and pull it into the types of platforms that AWS provide.
Mm. We were chatting, Richard, yesterday about South African companies perhaps being a little bit behind their international counterparts in moving to cloud, and perhaps a part of that was the fact that or perhaps one of the reasons companies are starting to look at it more seriously in South Africa is the arrival of the hyperscale data center operators in South Africa through the construction of local data centers. But Varsha, do you think, are companies here making the right decisions? You know, copying and pasting is clearly not the right one to make, but do you think with data centers like Amazon Web Services opening in Cape Town, do you think that's going to accelerate discussions in corporate South Africa about what they should be doing in this space?
I think it definitely does change the conversation. One of the holdbacks has been around data governance, as an example. So a bit of concern around where will my data physically be, what's going to happen to it, who has access to it. So the opening in South Africa actually addresses that problem quite effectively and closes the one negative pathway. So it opens up a bit more opportunities around, okay, we've addressed those key issues and concerns, what next can we do? And that leads immediately into how do I derive value? And if I go back to the copy and paste, I think another thing that held people back was concerns around things like bandwidth. And I think a lot of those types of concerns, I mean, part of it was, yes, about location of centers, but part of it was actually due to people thinking they need to move all data for the same use cases or purposes across. And actually, they just architected differently. They could understand that different data serves different use cases, and they can optimize their usage of something like AWS by properly understanding where should the data go. Mm. So I think we're getting to that maturity of conversations now.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting what you say about bandwidth and telecommunications infrastructure. There's been a huge amount of investment in the country in that space in the last few years. Do you think the bandwidth constraints question, problem, issue, concern has been adequately dealt with now?
I think it has. I mean, I think we are emerging and developing, so there's always improvements that need to happen. But given where we are, I think there's still massive benefits that we can obtain from the current infrastructure.
Yeah.
But again, it goes to use cases.
Right.
And I think it comes on, so I think, to Richard's point about skills. So how do we help businesses evolve their own data skills to answer the right data questions using the right types of technologies, software, and architecture?
Okay. Well, let's delve into that in a little bit of detail, specifically around analytics and big data in the context of hyperscale computing. How are these different when run, say, in an Amazon Web Services environment, say, compared to what companies have been doing on-premise?
I think traditionally there's been a divide between business and IT, because IT always needed to plan the capacity and infrastructure for what needed to happen, and business didn't necessarily have a full understanding of what they wanted to do with it. So it became a bit of a serial process of trying to create infrastructure. By the time the infrastructure lands, it's optimized, we can get data in, it's already 3 months past what clients were probably trying to solve for, or the business side were trying to solve for. So when you shift that into a hyperscale environment, your scaling possibilities change, which means trying to get to analytical answers and trying to get through the processing, it's far more efficient, far more effective, and you don't have that serial delay process that held it back previously. So your time to value changes dramatically. And I think that's critical in terms of bridging that gap between IT and business.
Yeah. So it allows you to do more, and it allows you to do more faster as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And to fail quickly, because business doesn't have all the right questions immediately. So even the IT counterparts can support them by creating an environment that's flexible, scale up, scale down, as per use cases.
Yes, yes. I think a big challenge that companies are sitting on is that, you know, they've got more and more data than ever before, but the difficulty is translating that into any sort of real actionable intelligence. I imagine it's difficult to get this right. What are some of the things that companies should be considering when having these conversations?
I think we'll probably have to count the times I'm saying use cases, but you know, there's a reason for it that I keep bringing it up in these conversations. I think a traditional mindset might say, for me to derive value from this data, I need all of it and every bit of it in one type of data container, one type of data storage to show me value. And that process is cumbersome. So I think that shift in that agility in thinking is about how do you match that agility in thinking to the agility that infrastructure now provides us, these hyperscale environments. Because now we can actually bring that data in. We don't need to bring it all within the same types of containers. We need to understand what container is most effective for answering that particular use case or question. To give you an example, if I was doing regulatory reporting and I need highly structured data, very clearly defined, I would go towards something like an Amazon Redshift type of solution versus I've got a lot of IoT information streaming in. I need a different type of way of managing this data. So it might be about lots of storage in an S3 type of environment, but also then my streaming Kinesis type of solutions. So again, it's matching what am I trying to achieve from this data? It's not let's put all the data in one place and now we've got value. It's got to be about the use case, matching an architecture, matching an outcome.
Mm. And I suppose in many respects, it actually forces companies into thinking about the way their systems are architected, the way their data is structured, and it's actually probably leading to good conversations that can help them if they do the right things to make them more competitive.
I'm really hoping so. I mean, we often talk about IT strategies and data strategies. At the end of the day, it's a business strategy. And once you understand the business strategy, then it's working backwards to understand how do these things actually support it. Mm. I know that sounds so basic and so obvious, but oftentimes, you know, we try to solve it as just let's put in an appliance technology and land that big box for the happy box huggers. You know, they've got something to wrap their arms around and it's big and it's visible, which is cool, you know, and maybe there's some people in organizations really excited because we've got this box. But what's the value? There's still a missing translation because I've landed something, but I haven't seen the full value chain through.
Yeah.
So again, it's how do you get to that value chain faster?
I suppose, Varsha, it's a discussion that's been going on in IT for decades, and that's who should have responsibility for driving these processes, and in very very often in companies they the business comes up and says, well, we need a solution to do this, and it's handed off to the IT department to do, and they run with the project rather than having direct involvement from business leaders and perhaps some of these projects like. Moving to cloud require direct involvement of many people way beyond the CIO in the organization. Richard, is that, I know this conversation has been going on in this industry for a very long time, but are we making progress?
I think we are. The nice dynamic of what AWS brings on the back of what Varsha was saying around S3 buckets and how your data is structured inside the AWS platform, the automation component is so critical. So the CIO, as opposed to worrying about whether they're actually moving the data now from an S3 environment into maybe a deep archive type state like Glacier or something like that, where your cost automatically is going to start being reduced because you're not really using that data. You've done the analytics around it. You've got the information and you push it off, but you don't have the human intervention that has to sit there to say, well, have I actually done this? It's not actually happening automatically, and that's the great benefit around hyperscale.
Varsha, how do you ensure that you're using the right data and putting the right rules against that data to ensure you're getting the information that you need to make business decisions? And I know there's a big move to real-time business, real-time analytics to help companies make decisions on the fly. Who should be involved in building these real-time analytics systems inside the organization? Again, coming back to the question of the business versus IT and who should be driving these things. How do you see these projects typically unfolding, and how should they be unfolding?
Sure. So I guess typically how they unfold is very much what Richard described. You know, it tends to be IT on one side, business on one side. But data is kind of the great collaborator in a way. Because it does touch and span both environments. What we are finding is that there are CDO-type functions in organizations, and the CDO could be either the chief digital officer or the chief data officer. So there tends to be also a data organization. And we've seen two types of models, a centralized one and a federated one. Mm-hmm. So centralized, where all of the building of the infrastructure around this, the environment sits centrally, and then the client just consumes the content in there or pushes data into it. And then we've seen the other model where within different hubs in an organization, it's quite federated, and each hub is almost independent in creating these infrastructure pieces. In terms of what works going forward, again, it comes down to agility. Neither the hybrid nor the central works all the time. So what you need is something a little bit more flexible.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need to be able to move at the speed of the business requirements. And I think, again, that's where a hyperscale environment is a little bit different. And again, I'm going to say use case, because if I take an organization and we have a marketing department, we have a fraud department, and we've got the customer data information management space, they have different types of requirements. The fraud department really does need real-time analytics. And so the environment structured for them in the hyperscale world looks a little bit different. Complementing that world can be something that's a bit more a combination of data that's moving really fast and data at rest. That could be your customer data. It's not all customer data is changing on a daily basis. Again, you've now got an environment which is enabling you to create an ecosystem that gives you the real-time piece that you wanted, plus optimizes the other type of use case that you need. Now, it's that type of thinking, that type of approach, which we've seen succeed in the organizations that are truly data-driven. Is that kind of
it
answer
does.
The question?
It does, indeed. Are there particular industries that are better suited to hyperscale computing? I imagine financial services is one that would be particularly suited, but are there some industries where companies can afford to sit back and say, well, no, we've actually got a pretty good in-house IT department, our systems are running pretty well on-premise, we don't actually need to consider this? Or is it a case of every industry can see benefit through moving to cloud?
You know, I think every industry creates an intense amount of data that can actually add a lot of value to their business. And their ability to make sense out of that data is going to be part of their competitive advantage and part of their survival in this type of world. I mean, COVID brings that whole angle of, we all thought things were good enough, but good enough is not good enough. You need to change, shift. And when it hit, so many companies went into cash forecasting and then realized they didn't have all the data at their disposal to start doing this, or they didn't have sufficient information about their own infrastructure or their own staff in terms of how to enable them. So I don't think anyone can sit back and not make the maximum use out of data as an asset. And a way to do that is definitely to then look at the hyperscale world, because you want to see value quickly. You also want to test that you're using things efficiently. You don't need to apply a hammer to everything. You can pick the pieces that are going to make sense to you. And I think that's important. Instead of just having a hammer, okay, I don't know much about tools, you've now opened up an array of different spanners of different sizes. You know, it gives you different options.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't think anyone could afford not to.
But it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Not a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah. Lastly, let's talk a little bit about skills, because I imagine that companies that decide to embark on this journey and embrace hyperscale, embrace the cloud, are going to have to, at the very least, reskill some of their people to work in this environment. And I imagine that can be quite difficult in some instances. People are reluctant to change. To what extent do companies need to go through a reskilling process as they move to hyperscale cloud services? And what's involved in that? And how should companies be approaching the conversation?
I think it links back to what Richard spoke about previously around culture. I think the first step is accepting that this is going to be a change, and it is at a cultural level. So it's not just skill. There's something around the hard skills, but there's also the softer skills about rethinking exactly how one engages in an environment like this. So to give you an example, if someone's traditionally worked on Excel or a structured database that sat on the server under their desk, it's a very different mindset for them to understand that, wow, they've got this hyperscale, and things they thought were a no or not a non-possibility, that's disappeared. You know, you are now limited by your imagination about how you put these pieces together to achieve something. That's a complete culture shift that hasn't got anything to do even with the technical bits. So the one aspect for me is that. The second bit then comes to technical skills. And even there, it's understanding current foundational stuff does not go away in a cloud world. And what do I mean by that? Yes, we've got hyperscale, we've got analytics, we've got streaming analytics. You still need to understand data governance in the cloud. You still need to ensure data is safe. You need to understand its journey. So it's actually a melding together of skills and then taking it to a next level. That's critical.
Yeah. So Varsha, how does IOKO help companies around the skills question?
So one of the ways we help them is through a skills incubation program. Part of that is where we work on a project with identified individuals within their teams, and we help upskill them during a project implementation. Through this process, they're able to understand the technical bits, but also understand how it fits into their organization. So by the time a project concludes, we actually have a competency built in within the business itself.
Richard, what's your take on the skills issue and how companies should be approaching it?
So if you're going to be operating in the likes of AWS, you need to be spending roughly 30% of your time ensuring that you're certifying and skilling yourselves up. If we look at how AWS has structured their training programs, as a start, you take the solution architect route and you get up to a professional level there. And that really gives you that ability to be able to architect and structure the design for the applications. But then on the back of that, you know, you've got the speciality tracks. So then you look at big data, SysOps, DevOps, security. So very critical skills that complement the design solution architect individuals. And I think with Varsha's team specializing in, you know, the big data space, you know, in terms of that competency and the rest of, you know, the cloud world and IOKO having a lot of the other competencies, it's quite a nice partnership when you look at how you deliver that full end-to-end capability in terms of the application. But it's important that organizations go out and also do that development. I mean, yes, you can rely on advanced partners like IOCO, but it's also good to understand and skill yourself up, because there's so many things that actually are happening in the hyperscale platforms today.
Great discussion as always, guys. But before we go, Richard, you want to chat a little bit about AWS offers that IOCO has launched. If listeners to this podcast visit www.ioco.tech/AWS-offer, I'll repeat that, ioco.tech/AWS-offer. Richard, what are they going to get there?
So thanks, Duncan. Yeah, it's with the launch of the AWS region, what IOCO has done is we're offering a number of free one-day workshops around the DevOps space, looking at microservices, looking at cloud-native development, and a number of other areas around discounting on migrations and some of the managed services capabilities. So I think it's really nice if you want to dip your toe into the water and have a look and see what's really happening in AWS. We're very happy to oblige and provide some of our expertise and knowledge back into the community.
Fantastic. Varsha Ramesar, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Varsha, is Managing Executive for Data and Analytics at IOCO, and Richard Vester is the company's Executive Head of Cloud. Thanks so much for your insights.